session, I'm pleased to introduce Michael Walsh and Jacqueline Choi, who are going to be sharing about the Wunnawal language revitalisation.
So it's wonderful to be here at this next ILCDC event. I came here 2 years ago and it was a really fantastic experience. And I'm delighted, I'm Jackie Troy, and I'm delighted to be joined by a countryman of mine, Tyrone Bell, who's actually the star of the show, a Ngunnawal elder. His father was a great elder in our community, as is his mother. Before we ever start our presentations, in Australia it's customary for us to acknowledge the traditional owners of the country on which we meet. So I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the Hawaiian Islands and thank them for having us in their country and welcome them to our countries when they have the opportunity. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to my colleague Michael Walsh and or maybe Tyrone wanted to say something before we started.
I'm Michael Walsh, as indicated. What I'm trying to do in this session, or we all are trying to do, is to give you a flavour for a very recent language revitalisation attempt. This is the Ngunnawal people of Canberra, which is Australia's national capital. So it's only about 18 months ago that the IATSIS Centre for Australian Languages, of which I'm still a part, began a community outreach program in the region. This was sort of in contrast to what the Institute had been doing over its 50 years of history, which was to spend a fair bit of time at the other end of Australia. So think back to Franz Boas. There he is at Columbia University in New York, and he's going off to Kwakwala and such like in British Columbia to do his study. What was happening with the languages of New York? Well, probably going down the drain, relatively speaking. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Aboriginal Australia, there are about 250 separate languages. Ngunnawal's about here, down in the southeast. The southeast got hit fairly hard early on, and so a lot of the languages were went backwards, if you like. The current situation for Australian languages, at first sustained contact, there are over 250 separate languages and dialects. Only about 120 are still spoken, and of these, only 13 can be considered strong in the sense that they're learned by children as a matter of course. And most of, well, pretty well all of those are in Northern Australia. So, to go back to the beginning, the first community meeting we had with the Ngunnawal, these are some slides that I prepared for a group of Ngunnawal people, and it was, in fact, when I first showed this slide, I got ticked off by one of the elders, Auntie Ruth Bell, who said, well, you've already got the language name wrong. So I'd put two N's in the middle. So one of the message from this, I guess, is that we're quite prepared to be flexible. So we crossed that middle N out, and that's the way it's been ever since. Another thing I wanted to show to Ngunnawal people is that they're at the beginning of a journey, and there are other peoples like the Gunai of Victoria. Particularly people in the back might not be able to read all this, but the point is you'll be able to get to the slides, which will be available later on. The point is that the Gunai are somewhat similar to the Ngunnawal in having a fairly low level of documentation, but the difference is the Gunai got started about 20 years ago. They're now teaching the language in schools and stuff off a fairly low documentary base. Another thing that I tried to show the Ngunnawal mob was that this is essentially a journey. Again, you won't be able to read this from the back of the room, but essentially the green stuff is starting out, then you've got blue, sounds and words, sentences and grammar, eventually through to the red, advanced language revival. So this is an extract from a guide to language revival prepared by the Victorian Aboriginal Corporation for Languages, so that's the metaphor of a journey that we're talking about. We've spent quite a bit of time on the starting out process because we wanted to have the community come with us rather than we linguistic technicians, if you like, driving the show. So that's the reference to Pichawan Win, which is a guide to language revival planning put out by Victorian Aboriginal Corporation for Languages. Another thing we wanted to get across to the Ngunnawal, who are not linguists, is that linguistic expertise can look at old records and breathe life into them, if you like. One of the place names right nearby Canberra is a place called Mikalago, and what you'll see going down the right-hand side is a series of sources from around the mid-19th century. These are often surveyors, or George Augustus Robertson was a bricklayer, until he turned into something more. But at the top you'll see that one source doesn't even get the initial consonant right. It gets an N instead of an M. When you get right down to the bottom, Mikalago turns out to be something like Medjuligo. So it's like Mikalago is a very rough rendition of the place name that was originally taken down 150 years ago or more. Another place name nearby is Tidbinbilla. Again, a series of sources, and what we find there is that the real pronunciation of Tidbinbilla is something like Jinminbili. So from Tidbinbilla to Jinminbili. The source for that is Harold Cock, who's looked at some of the process of reconstructing Indigenous place names in that part of the world. So what do we know about Ngunnawal? You can see that there's the Canberra and the ACT. Ngunnawal's about the middle of the slide. Jackie Troy's linguistic heritage is Ngarrugu, a bit to the south. And so that's basically where it is. Again, people at the back of the room may have difficulty reading this, but the punchline essentially is as shown there, if I can read it myself, present number of speakers and their location, presumably zero. So this is an extract from the Handbook of Aboriginal Languages of New South Wales and the Australian Capital Territory. Text, none known. Grammar, or sketch grammar, none known. Language program, little bit of stuff happening. Language learning material, none known. Literacy material, none known. You're getting the idea? This is a language that's not well documented. The bibliography can be basically written on the back of an envelope. The one that you should keep in mind, I guess, is Matthew's 1904, because that's something that we drew on with effect. Here's a series of community meetings starting on the 25th of September, about 18 months ago. The last one was the 12th of February, so only a couple of weeks ago. The next one's the 12th of March, and I've already been given my tasks to compile for that particular meeting. So here's an example of a community meeting. The phenomenon here is can be referred to informally as linguist overload. So there's Sally McNichol on the left, then Jackie Troy, another linguist, Tyrone Bell right there in the middle, and Doug Marmion, the other linguist. I tried to offset this linguist overload by not being there, but the point is you've got three linguists and three community people.
No, we're used to that when we go out with archaeologists.
Right, okay. Now this is another example of a community meeting, a bit larger. Right down the end of the long table is the Director of Collections at the Institute of Aboriginal Studies, and she's flanked by two lawyers, because one of the things that we wanted to do, or the community wanted to do, was to establish protocols for their materials to be archived in an appropriate way. Yet another community meeting. Here we see Tyrone in the back row. Along the front are three community elders and a sort of budding linguist sitting on the lap of Dot right there. We're hoping that he or she will get with the program. So the community knowledge aspect, despite the claims in the Handbook of Aboriginal Languages, turns out there's quite a bit of community knowledge that was unknown to the academic community. So an important outcome of this language revitalisation project has been a substantial increase in the documentation of Ngunnawal. So possibly Tyrone will talk about that in a while. Here's another example of an output. So this is from a meeting of the 10th of July 2014, a bit over a year ago, where we've got a series of body part terms, a phonemic form, and then a spelling. The diacritics just sort of floated off to the right a bit, but you can see the tooth is kind of floating around there for laminodental stops. One of the other tasks that we were given was to develop an acknowledgement of country. Jackie in the introduction talked about the importance of acknowledging traditional owners and so on. What we were asked to do was come up with a Ngunnawal version of, we wish to acknowledge the Ngunnawal people as the traditional owners and protectors of the land on which we meet today. Together we will help to look after the people, plants, animals and land we are on. This is a language that's got just a few hundred items of vocabulary. So some of these words, particularly protector, traditional owner and stuff like that, are going to be a challenge of some kind. Here's an example of the work in progress. So basically on the left we've got a word or concept like acknowledge, and then potential Ngunnawal words that could be used, one of them being welcome, and that's a term I won't call out myself, because the comment says not really appropriate for non-Ngunnawal people to use, ? Our most recent meeting indicated that it is inappropriate for someone like me to use, but it is appropriate for someone like Tyrone, who is a Ngunnawal himself, to use that Ngunnawal word for welcome. Some more work in progress, trying to come up with a verb to look after. So we've got some words from the limited sources, protect, listen, look, etc. And for the listen word, you'll see a capital A in the middle. That's an indication that we're actually not quite sure of the precise vowel quality of that particular item, because we've got older sources which are sometimes difficult to interpret. But in the end, we did come up with a simplified acknowledgement of country, which comes out as something like Daura Nguna, Daura Ngunnawal, this land is Ngunnawal land. And the welcome to country is that plus the Ngunnawal word for welcome, which I won't call out as well. We got a community request from the non-Aboriginal community. An organisation wanted a name in Ngunnawal to replace a word they've been using before in Gundungurra. That was one of the languages to the north of traditional Ngunnawal territory. So it's to the credit of that non-Aboriginal organisation that they were aware that it was more appropriate to use a language of the land if you're naming someplace. The name should mean something like rebirth or renaissance. Renaissance? Give us a break. Remember, we've only got a few hundred items of vocabulary, so how are we going to come up with something like renaissance or rebirth for that matter? One of the team of linguists, Doug Marmion, located a term from the R.H. Matthews article published in 1904, which is budgie, to rise or arise, and what he did was put it together with the first person plural inclusive pronominal suffix, Munyan, and so, yes, we do have a new name, Budgie Munyan, we all arise, roughly renaissance or rebirth. And so that was something that was only approved about 2 weeks ago and is now booked down, if you like, as part of the growing resources of Ngunnawal. Another request from the Ngunnawal community is for the next meeting, only a couple of weeks to go, each participant has to turn up with at least one sentence in Ngunnawal. So that's part of my homework.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, well, okay. Well, now you do. So do you want to say something, or?
I'll get Jackie to say something.
Okay, come up then. Just while she's coming up, I should say that there are a lot more resources that have been developed, including word lists, literacy packs for use in schools, but I haven't actually received approval to be presenting those in the PowerPoint as yet, so that's one reason I didn't display them, but there's a lot more than what I've actually shown in this brief. statement.
So as a bit of a way into us hearing about how it is for Tyrone and his Ngunnawal community to be getting their language back as a spoken language, I guess the point I'd like to make is that as the former Director of Research at the Australian Institute for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies, it was really important to me also as an Aboriginal person not to be, if you like, forcing the issue with research. Sure, we're meant to do research, that's what the Institute was set up to do. And in its original 50 years ago, last year it was founded, its original brief was to actually go out and kind of collect everything up before all the Aboriginal people of Australia basically disappeared, and all our cultural forms, our languages and everything else, and to keep it in this kind of collecting space which we now have at the Institute, so that if people want to in the future, I mean, we'd all be gone, but you know, anybody else who wanted to do research about us would have access to records about our peoples. In fact, it's turned out to be a marvellous resource for our peoples, and through having that resource, we're able to do this kind of work and also contribute to building that collection. So the Institute is now particularly heading in the direction of being, if you like, an accessible collection for Aboriginal peoples, Torres Strait Islander peoples and other Indigenous peoples from around the world who are interested in our histories, our languages and also, of course, other researchers as well, but also community people in particular. So it was important to me not to be, if you like, saying to my, especially my country people, they're my neighbours, look, you know, you need to get your language back. We can do this for you. It wasn't like that. It'll never work like that. Tyrone and I have been talking about this project with his parents since the 90s, essentially. And it's a long, slow cooking exercise that, in fact, we were just reminiscing now that, you know, the community was caught up in all kinds of other major issues like land rights issues, native title issues as we have in Australia, and a whole range of other things that are a big challenge to every Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community in Australia. And then just in the last year, the last 18 months, really there was this moment in time where Tyrone and his family and other members of the community thought, well, it's time we had our languages available through our schools in Australia. We've been doing some of that work ourselves, Michael and I, on developing a national curriculum for all 250 of our Australian languages. And, you know, Tyrone is aware of this as well. The schools in the ACT are saying, let's teach Ngunnawal. If we're going to have a language program available, let's do that. It doesn't have to be a European language or an Asian language, or English, which is supposedly the language of Australia. In fact, 250 Australian languages that we aren't even really allowed to call Australian because English is the Australian language. How does that work? So, yeah, so a whole lot of things came together, and it was a community-driven exercise, and that's what I'd like to emphasise, is that no institution, no archive, no collection, no university can ever own what it is that belongs to the community. It has to be the community driving it. I mean, that's our experience in Australia. I think it's probably pretty much an international experience as well. I've seen that in Hawaii with the revival and maintenance of the Hawaiian language as well, and it's so. This is another success story in the pantheon of getting all our languages, our Indigenous languages of the world, back. So, with 2 minutes to go, okay. Tyrone, I'd love to.
Thanks, Jackie. Yeah. My name's Tyrone Bell. I'm a Ngunnawal man. I'll say Yella Mundi, which means welcome in Ngunnawal language. Like, this has been a really long journey, not only for me, but my family and extended family. For over 28 years I was involved in doing cultural heritage survey works. You go out, find Aboriginal sites where our ancestors lived on the land. But one day I woke up and said, well, I want to start doing my language, because it felt like a big hole of I felt empty. And to all the other Indigenous people out there, and that, as you know, and that language is your soul, and I wanted to reclaim my soul and also share my language not only with my family, extended family, but also the wider community where I live, so when they look out their door and window on that, and hopefully they'll start to learn to speak Yunawal in the future. So we're going out into the schools and that, and this year we're looking at doing some pilots. But of course we need the key thing there of funding and trying to get funding to extend what we're trying to achieve in that. But it's like a long journey, but we just want to do baby steps and then of course like grow from that. And I've had other ones in my community where they've said this will never work, and now I look back on that and you know, I just say, well, what do you think now? I'm over in Hawaii. But in saying that, hopefully they'll come back and get involved in that, and we can continue a lot of good things. I think my time's up. Thank you.
Questions or comments? Yeah, Dr. Tan.
I was wondering if there are any related languages or neighboring languages where you can draw on sources to expand the vocabulary eventually of the language, or that are a little bit better documented, or have the revitalization programs already, or anything like that?
Well, there are, I mean, in fact, I'm hoping that it might help me with my own language. So we've got partial vocabulary sets and some grammatical information obviously contained within those and other documents. But the best documented languages in New South Wales, or the ones that are furthest down the revival track, if you like, are Gamilaroi, Wiradjuri, Barkindji, languages up on the north coast of New South Wales as well. Gunungara is coming along, and you know, so we can use information about other New South Wales languages. Probably the most outstanding grammatical description would probably be the Nyampa Wongaipuan one from midwestern New South Wales by Tamsin Donaldson, who sadly left us recently. So we've got enough. It's not even just neighbouring languages. There is quite a lot of information about the languages of southeastern Australia, which can give us clues. But of course, part of the whole process is for the community themselves to negotiate relationships with other language groups to see, you know, what is possible. So it's not really a simple matter of just taking from another language group and building, you know, Ngunnawal.
Because we're starting to find a lot of the information's coming from the churches, like missionaries and that. So we've got to go into their archives and that and see what's there.
So there's probably still quite a bit more Ngunnawal material before we have to go to that next step.
Yeah, it's a political issue. In leaving aside the Ngunnawal, in other parts of Aboriginal Australia, people can't just borrow stuff from their neighbour. They've got to negotiate with those people. And there are some linguistic tricks that can be pulled to borrow something from a neighbouring group without it really being borrowing. I can tell you about that later if you like. But the point is that the best documented neighbouring language is Wiradjuri, somewhat to the west of Ngunnawal, but it's not necessarily the case that the Ngunnawal want to take stuff from Wiradjuri. They might want to take it from somewhere else, and also the Wiradjuri have to be consulted and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a process. Aliki. Yeah.
So are there actually
classes
going on in
kids'
already?
In Ngunnawal or in general? Not Ngunnawal just yet. Just about to start.
But those other languages that I was naming just then, there's probably about, I guess there'd be maybe even as many as 12 to 15 languages in New South Wales that are being taught routinely in schools. And some years ago, Michael and I developed a curriculum for the state of New South Wales, which is our most populous state in Australia, to teach all 70 of the languages of New South Wales. And now we're working on this other one that's a framework from which curriculum can be developed for any other language from entry level, school entry level up to year 10. So it doesn't include the so-called college years, as it's known in North America, years 11 and 12. But
so when Jackie and I were first doing that stuff in New South Wales about 15 years ago, there were things just starting to happen. By 2013, I believe, a report indicated that there were 8,000 students learning an Aboriginal language in New South Wales schools. Of those, 4 out of 5 were non-Indigenous. Mm-hmm. And one of the effects of that has been, as reported by some Aboriginal groups, that the level of racism has decreased sharply in some of those somewhat redneck communities. Yeah. Okay.
So, the language curriculum that you're developing is non-language sensitive?
Well, it's...
Yeah, it's going to be... It's got to be one size fits all for any of 250 separate languages. Try doing that in Europe.
Yeah. It's on the website for the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA, CARA, and you can have a look at the draft framework for Aboriginal languages and Torres Strait Islander languages that's up there now and see how it's kind of put together. So it basically provides teachers with the, if you like, the framework, the fleshing out of what kind of content you might build into a specific curriculum, and also guidance on assessment, and you know it's quite a good guide, but it's not specific, obviously. Yeah.
I'm actually going to play you something, right?
Oh.
This was found on a tape of my late father's. This is Dad. Singing one of our song lines in Nunawar, and I'll explain it in a minute.
Probably good up to the mic. Might, yeah, hopefully.
You'll hear me turn the tape off in a minute. But that nearly got thrown out by mistake. Dad used to go away and record himself with Dreamtime Stories, but also with our song lines. So to find something like that is pretty rare for us. I asked Mum what the story meant, and it's about the Bunyip over what we've got in Australia, what lives in the water. And the elders used to sing that to the children and saying, well, if you don't behave in that, the Bunyip will come and get you. So you can see how it's a little catchy tune too. But I just thought I'd share that with you.
So that's an example of material that was just unknown to the Institute and the academic community until we started engaging with the Community for Language Revitalisation. Therefore, go out and engage with the community. If you want better documentation, is the take-home message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's
like this.